From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm producer Megan Mack, alongside host Evan Dawson.
Happy end of week, I guess, Megan Mack.
Happy end of week. The week began with the supercharged controversy around the I-Square project in Irondequoit, and it centers on the question of whether a local political leader was willing to hurt a local business just to score political points.
He says that's not the case, but here's the background. I-Square is a mixed-use business development in Irondequoit. Coffee shop, wine bar, restaurant, conference space, outdoor amphitheater planned, the works. It's a few years old, and the owners, Mike and Wendy Nolan, have secured tax agreements through COMEDA, the County of Monroe Industrial Development Agency. Irondequoit Supervisor Adam Bellow is a Democrat, and he's been a big supporter of I-Square. Bellow has been appointed to the job of Monroe County Clerk. So the Republican Party Chairman, Bill Reilich, put out a statement criticizing Bellow, again a Democrat, saying he's abandoning the town of Irondequoit and saying that I-Square is actually failing and defaulting. Here's the problem. It's not failing. Not even COMEDA agrees with that. It is on time with its payments and hiring targets.
We invited all parties to the show. The Nolans came in to defend their project, and they broke a little news by saying that they're ready to sue the local Republican Party. Let's listen to what Mike and Wendy Nolan said.
We'll get our attorneys involved at this point. This has been escalated to a degree that's extremely harmful to the future of I-Square. And by COMEDA's actions, their statements, as well as Mr. Reilich's. It's definitely escalated to a point where this will end up in the courts over those statements that were made.
And are you going to file a libel or defamation claim?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes.
Against Mr. Reilich?
Yes.
Well,
and the GOP.
Well, for that matter, then, let me go ahead and read Bill Reilich's newest statement, which came in about 15 minutes ago, just before the Nolans arrived here. And before I do that, you know, Wendy, I know your husband's doing a lot of the talking. How are you? Let me just ask, how are you doing?
It's been a long weekend. It's very hurtful. We work so hard to improve our area in Irondequoit, and for someone to try and tear us down, it's very hurtful. We've invested millions of our own dollars. We've invested thousands of hours of our own time. The community loves I-Square. And to come out and say something just for political reasons, I'm a registered Republican. Bill Reilich does not represent me or Monroe County, and he should resign for the things that he has said about I-Square. It's hurtful, it's personal, and it's just not right.
Let me go ahead and read his updated statement then. This is from Bill Reilich, and it came in just before this program began. I'll read it in its entirety. We'll get the reaction from Mike and Wendy, but also we'll bring Adam Bellow into the conversation. Here's what Bill writes. Quote, when this story first began to develop late last week, the first words out of my mouth were, the town of Irondequoit is a beautiful place filled with good people. I know firsthand the challenges of running a business in New York State, having built my very own business from the ground up and operating it for 28 years. I also know the important role town government plays in the success of local development projects. Often the town is the first place a potential developer goes for assistance. The issue I raised with I-Square was not with the developer, but rather with Adam Bellow, who was abandoning them during a time of great need. Despite appearances, the documents released by COMEDA clearly show that the project is in jeopardy and has failed to fulfill its promises to the taxpayers. It is no secret that I-Square received millions of dollars in taxpayer assistance through abatements and grants from the town, school district, county, and state. I certainly recognize the need for that assistance given the state's dismal business climate, but I also know that taxpayers demand accountability for their investments. I truly believe this project can be successful. I'm just disappointed that Adam Bellow has decided to abandon them during this difficult time. End quote. That's from Bill Reilich again, just before this program began. Mike and Wendy, does that change your view at all, Wendy?
We'd never have felt abandoned by Adam Bellow. He has been the consummate professional. He brought professionalism to Irondequoit that we had missed out on. He treats it as a job. Job number one is being the town supervisor. He actively seeks investment and development of Irondequoit, and that's exactly what we're giving back, is investment in our community.
We'll certainly be following the I-Square controversy going forward. Next up, a discussion about something that Evan likes to call NIMBY Nation.
NIMBY Nation. NIMBY standing for Not in My Backyard. And it's the common situation where someone will say all the right things, They want to help people. They're concerned about people in poverty. But then when it's time to actually help someone in need by welcoming them to your community, they say, whoa, not here. Send them somewhere else. And that's kind of what happened last year with the Open Door Mission, which helps homeless men. And they wanted to create a new long-term residential care facility to help homeless women and children. But their proposed location in Rochester was rejected by the neighbors and the city. So Executive Director Mike Hennessy came on the show to tell us about how, well, what happened there and how they finally found a place that isn't hung up on NIMBY.
We decided and have the luxury, because we're independent, we can step back and look at the entire government system and find cracks. And we kept bumping into this very large crack that said there were up to 2,000 homeless kids within the Rochester City School District that fall under homelessness per the McKinney-Vento Act. So they have no permanent address. They may be sleeping in a car with mom. They may be couch surfing with an aunt or grandma. And we discovered that 42% of the kids K through 3 in the school district are chronically absent. Well, we assume that most of these kids are the guys that, you know, you'd see Bolton Vargas out knocking on doors looking to find, because they're registered in his school, but they're not in school and he can't find them. We thought that if we could work with the folks that could lead us to these women and children who were in the district, and if we could have an impact on these families and get them into a programmatic supportive housing program that's 6 to 9 months to a year, depending on how long they needed, get the kids immediately back into school and shore up the strengths and weaknesses with, it's mostly strengths, shore up the weaknesses that mom have, whether it be parenting, counseling, or job training, or GED, or whatever it is that they needed, and then get them to a place where they could have independent living. We found a place that we thought would work really well in the 19th Ward. It was an old Episcopal church on the corner of Post Avenue and Sawyer. And we immediately ran into strong resistance from the community association, and we were turned down twice by the City Planning Commission to operate there. So we determined, you know, we needed to find another space, and it was unfortunate. And we actually found a place that is not within the city, that we're being received quite graciously and optimistically, and we're moving forward. And I can't tell you much more than that, other than to say, we think we've found a really safe neighborhood for us to move into.
Now to some hot-button issues on the state and national level. First up, the minimum wage. New York State is considering a $15 minimum wage for all workers, not just for fast food or other industries.
Our panel included advocates for the higher wage and also business leaders who warn of mass layoffs and closures if the state adopts a $15 minimum wage. In this clip, you're going to hear a phone call from a local small business owner, followed by reaction from both the workers' advocates and from Mike Durant, the state director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses.
I'm a small business owner. I've been in business for 17 years. I employ 2 full-time and 2 part-time employees. The last time the minimum wage was increased, it gave the retired lady on Social Security too much money and she had to cut her hours. That's one of my part-time employees. And it gave the high school kid that cleans up my auto repair shop a raise after he'd worked here for about 3 weeks. So neither one had any effect. My 2 full-time employees make less than $15 an hour. So when the minimum wage does rise to that level, I'm going to be required to offset their income because now they're going to leave me to go to work for the fast foods. I survive on less than $50,000 a year annually. My wife works and she carries our health insurance. The last 8 years, I've used up every idea I've had to try to cut costs to stay in business. And if I hadn't paid off the mortgage on my house 5 years ago, I would not be in business now because I just can't make enough money either. I am part of that hardworking group that can't get ahead. We really need to look at the other side of this and find a way to help these people affected by these low wages a different way without causing chaos across the board that can't be undone. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for the phone call. Sky and Luis, when you hear that, does that move you? I mean, how do you feel about that, Sky?
Well, I mean, the bottom line, I guess what I want to convey to everyone is that workers are not eating properly. Workers are not eating. We're working very hard and we're not eating. As a small business owner, I heard him say you know, some of the personal things that he had to do, because it's a personal business. And I feel for business owners. I don't want not one business to fold. Do not get me, don't get me wrong. I do not want to see that. But at the same time, I am tired of being hungry.
Mike Durant represents businesses like Tim's. So Tim's not on the line anymore, but Mike is. So go ahead, Mike. Sky is saying that this is a very dire situation for too many workers right now, and as much as she might be sympathetic to Tim's situation, it's about helping workers. What would you say?
Well, I mean, Tim, his story represents basically what I've heard since September when the governor decided to embark down this journey. I mean, that's what I hear when I travel across the entire state. The small businesses, of which there are over 3 million of them in New York, of which over $900 billion is injected in our state's economy, are the ones that are going to get impacted.
Staying with the economy, let's go national. Donald Trump has been blasting free trade, saying he favors a trade war over current deals.
We welcomed Kent Gardner, the chief economist with the Center for Governmental Research, and Amit Badabial, professor of economics at RIT. They say free trade is taking an unfair hit, and here's why.
It's important to remember that typically wearing our consumer hats, the benefits are of two kinds: increased variety of products and lower prices associated with the products that you see. But again, here's the problem. So for instance, if we free trade in sugar with a whole bunch of Caribbean countries, and as a result, the price of sugar goes down by a dime, okay, that's fine. Everybody likes lower prices. But no one's going to be marching to Washington, D.C. because 100,000 consumers, their price of sugar went down by a dime. Nobody does that because the benefits of trade are broadly diffused in the economy and they're felt by a very large part of the population. But the people in the import competing sectors who are adversely affected by trade, many of whom are in manufacturing, it's much easier for them to band together, coalesce around certain common causes, and claim with considerable justification that we are being hit real hard by trade. Our government is doing nothing about it. Our government is more concerned about free trade. We don't see any benefits from free trade. That dichotomy, the benefits being widely diffused in the economy, contrasted with the losses, which tend to be very specific and concentrated, is what makes the argument for free trade very difficult to comprehend for a lot of people. The thing that I would urge your listeners to keep in mind about trade is that it does benefit countries in the aggregate. However, when you're voting, and whoever it is that you're voting for, think about the following: that some of our citizens, particularly those in manufacturing, are hurting big time, and we do need to put in place policies so that these people are helped in some way, particularly since they're not being afforded the assistance right now.
But ripping up trade deals isn't necessarily the best way to help.
Absolutely not.
Let's finish with a little sunshine. That's a terrible pun, which is surprising because Evan wrote this part of the script, and he hates puns.
I actually really hate puns. When I taught a class, I had a rule: no puns. You have to be a great writer to get away with a pun.
And notice how he assigned the pun to me in the script and not himself.
I do enjoy making other people read terrible puns.
Fair enough. We're talking about solar energy. We held a discussion about the state of solar energy in Western New York. Two different companies tell us they've set new records for home and business installations last year in the Rochester and Finger Lakes region.
This clip starts with a phone call from a woman in Williamson who explains her experience in purchasing solar panels for her home. And it opened a discussion on what kind of customer typically wants solar.
My husband and I actually just got the solar panels put in the beginning of March. And I wanted to add to the same effect that we didn't have to put any money down due to the NYSERDA grant. We are going to be paying also a very low interest monthly payment. It's going to be about $37. And we're super excited. We have had a little bit of it show up on our RG&E bill already. The first 3.5 days that the solar panels were up, we created 40 kilowatts. Hours, and I was told by the guys that were putting them on the roof that we were one of the youngest customers that they've had. When my husband and I are just turning 30 this year, so
you know that's interesting, Caitlin. They said you're some of the youngest. maybe I'm wrong. I kind of would think there might be a little bit of a generational split. And as millennials especially come into a little bit more of a stable home and income situation, that they may be more open to solar just because of habit. I don't know. But so, Caitlin, they said you're the youngest.
Yep, I completely agree. I mean, I shared the process. I was home with my two young girls. We were watching out the window as everybody went up with the solar panels, and I was posting pictures on Facebook, and all of my friends from high school were all commenting and asking who we were using and how it was working and if they could do it. So I definitely think that they're interested, and I have friends in lots of different states who are also looking into trying to figure out how to do it as well.
Caitlin, thanks for the phone call. Very interesting. All right, so Sean and George, would you agree with her that 30 is kind of young for what you've seen in terms of the homeowners? Because my expectation would be that millennials is sort of up their alley if they feel like they can afford it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly the demographic changes that are happening in our country and certainly in our area, are sort of that age bracket is coming to the point in their lives where they do have some disposable income. They're certainly educated on environmental issues and on energy issues. So we are actually seeing more and more younger customers.
That does it for Weekend Connections. You can hear Connections on weekday afternoons, noon to 2, on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR FM 88.5, and WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
Also on WXXINews.org/listen, and you can always find us no matter where you are on the WXXI mobile app.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you Monday afternoon.